This episode of the Out of Bounds podcast is brought to you by Fisher Skis. All right. So, boys, we are here. We're talking about last gear standing. And why don't you first introduce yourselves? We'll start with Ben because he is alphabetically first, and we'll go from there.
Hey, yeah, I'm Ben. I guess I was the last gear standing. I'm a PhD student at Northeastern, and I live up in Medford, Mass. Yeah, I just started to get out of this event just because, yeah, it involves skiing a lot, and I like skiing a lot. So.
Very cool. Jeremy?
I'm Jeremy Arnold. I live in Westford, Massachusetts. I'm a electrical engineer by trade, and it's my second time at last year standing.
Nice. Jeremy, how did you do last year? Like, what changed, I guess, because last year's record was, what, 36 laps or something like that?
34.
Yeah, what happened for you to almost double what last year's best was overall? And I heard this year's course was harder.
Yeah, so last year I was on a pretty strict time schedule. So I had about after 25 hours.
Okay.
And yeah, it was a little bit different format this year. All the race and heavy metal did the same course this year, whereas last year there was an extra kind of 300-foot boot back for the race division. So,
do you think that's better or worse? Because I actually thought last year it was a little confusing to me, I guess, when everybody started doing the boot pack up. Like, that seemed almost unfair to have two people going. Like, what happens if two people go back to back and one's doing the extra bit and one's not? Like, it was a little bizarre, I guess, but it was first year,
Yeah, it was first year. I think they're just trying to figure out what worked, what didn't. I think it was trying to level the playing field a little bit in terms of
gear.
Gear wise, right? But yeah, I mean, last year I think you had, one race guy go 29 laps and essentially do more vertical than the last gear standing. So that was odd.
Right.
So I think it worked out well this year.
Yeah, I'm in agreement. Okay, so what do you do after that much time? Like, that's so insane to me, to be on your skis over and over. And I guess let me explain the format really quick, and you guys can correct me for the specifics if you want. For people listening, basically last gear standing is an event where it's at Black Mountain in New Hampshire. And basically at the start of every hour, on the hour, you go up, you skin up a lap, and then you ski down. Right. And you have to be at the start of at the start point, basically at the top of every hour, until there's no more people left. Right. That's the gist.
Correct.
So for you guys, first of all, you guys don't know each other at all. But you guys ended up spending quite a bit of time together, just hanging out, basically, just being the last two. Like, was that weird? What was that part of the experience like? And this is, I guess we can start with Ben on this one.
Yeah, it was actually kind of funny. I was looking at, who was signed up for the race, kind of casually, and I saw, that Jeremy was signed up, and he was from the town I grew up in. I was like, oh, that's cool. I should, I should try to chat with this guy. And I had seen him in the results the year before, too, and I was like, oh, yeah, yeah, I should figure out who this guy is. And then I don't think I actually met or talked to Jeremy until at least 24 hours in. I'm not even really sure how long in, but yeah, quite a while in. But yeah, it was kind of nice to have the companionship, someone to talk to. You're kind of once it was down to just us two, you kind of feel like you're in it together for a little bit, because part of it's trying to win, but I feel like a little bit of it is you kind of also want to put up, have a good show, right? I think Andrew was pushing us a little bit for that too, just to see what was possible. And Yeah, but it was nice. I feel like there were some moments in the middle of the night where we were chatting and like both of us were like kind of delirious. Like, I don't know, like I feel like Jeremy was kind of mumbling something and I was like having trouble paying attention. And like, it was just like, I feel like we like occasionally made like bad conversation buds because we're just so like tired. But there were a couple laps where like some like fresh blood, you know, people who had actually like slept came out, and that was really nice. Just like, yeah, have someone who's like totally with it to talk to for like a lap or two, and can really, you know, kind of keep your brain occupied and not thinking about skiing or your feet or whatever.
Yeah. What? So, and this is for both of you guys. We start with Jeremy. What was the biggest hurdle you had to overcome? So for a lot of people that have done the event, they talk about like, okay, the first night is like where it switches over and it's kind of like a totally different game. It's like when you get to that first night, like what was it for you guys? What was the big sticking point? I mean, obviously it sucks. And by, you know, by hour 60, it's gotta be like, it's gotta be a totally different level of experience, but I just mean overall, were there nagging things? Were there things that you were like, oh, this is super annoying, this is bugging me? Did you have something like that, Jeremy?
Physically, I didn't. I mean, I don't think I had a low point. I just kind of cruised until, let's say, near the end of the second day. So kind of like when the sun was getting ready to rise, the wind also cranked up. So that was a big hurdle. There was probably only, you know, Ben, myself, Andrew, and Monty on the whole mountain, and you know the wind is ripping like 35-40 miles an hour, said like no protection. So
yeah. Oh, you were in full like skin suit too, right?
Yeah, I changed out of the bottoms, I don't know, at some point, and then just put on head on regular like soft shells and covered those with some thermal shorts. And then, you know, a bunch of layers on top.
Ben, did you have anything that was like, that was a big ailment, I guess, for you? Because like you and both of you, one of the main comments people had was how coherent you guys were. And I'm sure there was definitely points of like delirium. But the main thing that people got out of it, as soon as like Andrew's interviewing you and talking to you guys at the end, and everybody's like, how are they speaking right now? Like how, like why everybody else, myself included, like would have been like passed out on the floor. Like this is done. So talk to me a little bit about what you were feeling during it and what that was like.
Yeah, I think definitely like there were a couple things that were like maybe like potential limiters for me. Like the first night and maybe the second night too, I was like definitely concerned about the skiing and just like not getting hurt, you know, because I think that's kind of like the classic way, right? People tear their ACLs is like they go ski, they're tired, their legs don't work right, you know, you hit something fast and yeah, there you go. There's a year of, you know, skiing gone and, you know, being active and stuff. And so I don't know. To me, I was like, if I'm starting to get tired and not skiing well, like this isn't worth it to me to like really hurt myself doing this. Like I wouldn't be happy with myself for that. But I don't know. I never really resolved that. I just kind of like kept skiing. I guess the other thing that was kind of limiting for me, like I felt pretty good psychologically the whole time. And I think it really helped to have like people like for support. Like I feel like there are times when I probably would have quit if I didn't have like people, like especially my girlfriend, Michelle, as like support and being like, keep going. And but I think for me, the big limiter was just like physically my feet. Like I was like pretty intimidated by Jeremy's foot game. He had like a boot dryer, like infinite pairs of socks. He was like talking up how like his buddy was doing laundry for him at his condo. And I was like, man, I wasn't expecting to go more than like 24 hours. So I like only brought like 3 pairs of socks. So like, yeah, that should be enough for 24 hours.
Oh and my like, God.
So when it started going longer, I started, you know, recycling socks, you know, putting them out in front of the heater to dry and then putting them back on. And that's like, it's definitely better to switch and have dry, dirty socks, but it's definitely not as good as clean socks.
Yeah, not even close.
Yeah. And there's this moment like Sunday morning where I was like skinning, or Monday morning when I was like skinning up and I like felt something like on the bottom of my foot just like tear open. And I was like, I had never felt anything like that before, but just like, I didn't even want to know what was going on down there. But yeah, that lap was really hard because I was just kind of like, you know, just hard to put weight on the ball of your foot and like take a normal stride. And it was like right at the beginning too. So I wasn't sure after that if I'd do another lap, but I was able to like, you know, put some moleskin on it, change socks, put some tape on it, and then I guess kind of just keep going. I think they just sort of hit steady state, not very comfortable from there on. Didn't really get that much worse.
Was your binding broken too early on?
Yeah, I think like 25 hours in or something. Oh my God. Like I have this like teletech set up and like the, it's just a tech toe with a heel cable, like a normal tele binding. And the, yeah, the cable broke. Yeah, like 25 laps in or something. And I actually realized I had spare cables at home like today when I was like cleaning some stuff up.
Sick.
Didn't even know. But yeah, I don't know. I thought about changing skis because I had a spare pair of boots and skis. But they were like, they're at least, you know, a pound and a half heavier per foot. And I didn't really, and those boots aren't as good for my feet. So I didn't want to do that. So yeah, I just, you know, for the ride down, I just kind of, I put a volley strap to the heel riser and like strap my boot down. And yeah, skied about as well as any other tele binding. So I can't complain too much.
Yeah. There's a joke to be made there and I'm not going to make it because tele people are already mad at me all the time. So I'm going to leave it alone. But, I think that's crazy, first of all, because I think everybody would have just quit. Everybody else listening to this would have been like, okay, my binding's broken, I'm done, or they're going to switch. And if the other stuff isn't adequate, that's, you know, that's a wrap. That's my time here, you know? So props to you for continuing. I think that in itself, regardless of the athletic side of it, is pretty incredible. For both of you, what's your longest day out previous to this? You can start with Jeremy.
Yeah, I think my longest day was probably last year. I went 25 hours. So.
Right. And then, prior to last year, standing though?
Good question. I've probably done some mountain stuff that's, you know, probably 16,
okay,
18 hours. So.
Okay. So that part of it was
dark and end in the dark.
Got it. Yeah. Okay, cool. And Ben?
Yeah, I mean, ski-wise, I don't think I've ever done anything nearly as long. Probably the longest ski I've done is, you know, like 12 or 14 hours or something. But I guess I've done some like, mostly like, you know, 24-hour mountain bike racing and endurance mountain bike racing.
Right.
I did this one this summer, the Coos Loop up in northern New Hampshire. It's like a self-supported bike packing race. And that ended up being like 33 hours. So it was pretty good preparation, I guess.
Yeah.
I was coming into this being like, I've done 33 hours before and it was really long. I don't really want to go that far again, but I know that I can.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess it's got to be nice to have the confidence that you can do that.
Yeah.
How much of this is mental? How much of this is physical, do you guys think? Because at a certain point, you got to be just putting one foot in front of the other, right?
Yeah. Like, I mean, I really think. I mean, it's only physical to an extent, right? I think you just need to be fit enough to like do the lap in enough time that you can like rest and eat and deal with your feet and, you know, all that other stuff. Like, you don't need to be super fit or anything. Although I do think, and I have this theory and I keep talking it up because I really hope someone else is going to do it. But I really think if you're like fit enough to do like a half hour lap in zone two or something, that way, you know, you'd get back to the base and you'd have like 25 minutes to nap. And if you did that, I think you'd be virtually unstoppable and you could go like all week.
No way. All right. I hope someone does this. I hope you do this next year. And like, and then this becomes a thing, like this becomes a solution to this. But I don't know if that's, I don't know. That's just crazy.
I think you saw a little bit of that last year. Because they added on, you know, the Farmer and the Dell Loop, which without that and with the upper section groomed, you know, you'd be coming in low 30-minute
miles. Right. Yeah.
So.
I guess, but last year was shorter and people weren't napping. Like, I don't. So that's another thing that people kind of were bringing up. They were like, oh, like, they're not even really napping until when? Like, how long in until you guys started taking naps? Like, when was it for you, Jeremy?
I didn't start until it got dark. I wanted to just kind of stay on a somewhat normal schedule, if you will.
Yep.
I wasn't going to try and force a nap, but, you know, as soon as I felt like I needed one, I took it.
Hmm. And it was about the same time for you, first night? Ben?
No, not really. For me, I didn't sleep at all, Saturday night or Sunday night. I think, Monday, I sort of realized, midday Monday that, this was going to go into the night and that I'd had kind of trouble staying awake the night before. And so I was like, well, if this is going to go into the night, then I should really, I don't really see how many, I think there's, kind of a limit to how much caffeine you can take and how much it actually does for you. So I was like, I think the only solution to being, more awake tonight is, taking some naps this afternoon. So I started, Monday afternoon, trying to do, 10-minute naps every couple of laps.
Yeah, that's nuts too, because I think most people think of a nap, even a quick nap, like a little power nap, and they're like, all right, I wake up and I'm more tired than I was before the nap, and a lot of times, but to go back to the start line and then start skinny again seems like a weird thing, right? Like, that's not a thing that people do normally.
Yeah, it's super weird. I was actually kind of worried about that I'd start napping and my body would be like, yeah, I could do with some more of that. And then just not get up. But yeah, I don't know. It worked out. I sort of figured that that was a risk, but I don't know. I didn't think I was going to make it very far in the night if I didn't sleep a little bit. So
was there a point when you guys were alone? Cause how long were you guys skiing? Just the two of you for? It was quite a while, right?
18 yeah, hours.
How many?
Yeah, 18 or 16, something like that.
Oh, man. All right. So between that 18 hours, were you looking at the other guy like, I want to kill this guy? Like, I'm done. I can't deal with this right now. You need to quit right now. We're all friends. So. We're all friends here.
I think as we were saying before, part of you wants for it to be over. But the other part of you is... how far can we take this? And I can't remember when it was, but I joked early on. I said we should do, 69 laps, because that would put us one in front of the U.S. record for the running event. And Ben's like, all right, let's see what time would this be. I think that would be 7 a.m. we'd finish or something like that, right? On Tuesday. And I think he mentions it to Andrew, and Andrew's like,
yeah.
I don't know. I don't know what he thought.
Yeah, I can't imagine what he thought. I had talked to him a little before the event, during the event, and when you guys were going into the last night, because I was freaking out and a bunch of people online, I had posted it and people were hitting me up incessantly. Same thing with Andrew. Everybody was on the live. That kind of social engagement doesn't happen a lot. So I thought that part was really cool. And I don't know if you guys even were getting any of this information, that people were super into this event while it was going on. And I guess there is a question here. Did that impact you guys at all? Did you feel anything from that? And whoever can start, Ben. It's so hard to do this without being in person. Yeah, I'm not used to doing that. But no, all right, Ben, go.
I didn't know about it until Monday morning at some point. And maybe it didn't really blow up until Monday or Sunday night or something. I'm not really sure.
Right.
But yeah, I definitely felt. I mean, and I think for me it was mostly just hearing that some of my friends had found it and were watching and my old boss emailed me. I was like, hey, I have this friend who posted this crazy thing on Instagram, and I followed it down the social media rabbit hole, and there you are skiing for 50 some hours. So I don't know. I think it definitely influenced me a little bit to be people are watching, put on a little bit of a show and see how far we can go. And, definitely a little bit.
And Jeremy, what about you? Because you were sharing Instagram stories while you were doing this.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not much for social media, but, I was getting a lot of messages from friends, text, and otherwise. So, I just hopped on, Andrew's stories and started sharing a couple of them. So, but I don't know. I think, you know, it was more motivating to for like friends and family as opposed to just putting on a great show for the internet.
Yeah. No, and that's nice to hear too, because I think that is definitely the more important and the most important thing is doing it for yourself, like if you want to do it. But I was amazed, I think, at what kind of response it received, because Skimo and like Telly are not exactly the most popular parts of skiing, in case you guys didn't know this, but people were treating it like it was better than the Super Bowl. Like that was like real things that people were tweeting. Like, this is better than the Super Bowl. Like watching this, getting updates every hour on where these guys were at is better than watching the biggest sporting event of the year. Like people really felt that way. So, I mean, kudos to you guys, because that shit's amazing. Like people were super invested in it.
Well, it's kind of funny because I think the only Super Bowl updates we got were people yelling the score out of their condos.
Oh man, that's really funny. All right, well, so last thing I have for you guys, do you have any advice for somebody looking to compete in, like, because I'm sure you've motivated a bunch of people to do this event next year or try to get into this event next year. Do you have any advice for people that are probably going to be competing with either of you next season if you guys opt to do it again? And we can start with Jeremy.
Take the whole week off. I mean, you know, doesn't really matter how far you go, but you know, I found that I was kind of useless at work, you know, even up till maybe Friday. So you might as well take the whole week off. And then outside of that, you know, just come prepared with everything you can think of: gear, socks, you know, changes of clothing, blister prevention. I taped up my feet, so I didn't get any blisters or anything.
Very prepared. So I like that.
Experience went a long way on that one.
Yeah. So I know Ben has skied since then, but before I get Ben's take on advice for people, for you, have you skied since then? And I guess this is also for both of you. Does it feel a bit like, I guess the comparison for me is always eating a food that you just threw up recently, where you're like, eh, this is kind of gross. Like, I don't want to eat this. This is not what I want right now. Like, cause it just came out the wrong way. Like you have that feeling that like you want to do it and you want to do it. But in the moment you're just like, I can't make this happen. Do you have that feeling about skiing, and have you skied since then?
I haven't skied since then, but it's mostly just so I could, you know, spend time with my family. We have a sledding hill out, in our backyard. So we've been hitting that up recently, but I do plan on going back skiing on Wednesday.
Okay.
Would have been tomorrow except for the nice rain event we're having here.
Yeah it's dumb. I'm in East Hampton, Mass, and it's not much different here. It's pouring right now, actually. Ben, advice for people getting into this for next year, what do you got?
Yeah, I definitely echo what Jeremy was saying. Bring as many socks as you own, and then maybe like bring some more socks. I definitely could use some more socks. And I think other than that, yeah, like if you can convince a friend or a significant other to come and be support, like that made a huge difference for me. And I didn't do it this year, but I was thinking like if I was going to do this again, like I think Rick Chalmers did this, but like having a pretty like planned out, schedule for each lap of like what you're gonna do when you come in, because yeah, especially when you're like a little delirious or tired, it's hard to like remember all the things that you need to do, and sometimes you kind of fall behind a little bit. But if you have a list, it's like, you know, lap one, eat food; lap two, eat food; lap three, change socks; you know, lap four, I don't know, drink coffee, something like that. Obviously with some room for flexibility, would definitely help a lot. I think Rick's thread's more sort of more something like, you know, lap one, eat food; lap five, eat oysters or something. So
that's still so weird that's his move, is just eat oysters.
You know, I thought that was like a flex, like, you know, I'm going to eat this gross food while I like crush you all at skiing. but honestly, like I got one of those oysters and they're really tasty. And I think he just likes oysters, and I can kind of understand why.
Yeah.
They're like really salty. It's a lot of protein.
I mean, he won last year. I can't knock him. Like he's got to be right, right? But it's still weird to me.
I think so.
I can't remember when it was, but he gave oysters to, what, 3 or 4 different people?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think I was one of the few at that time that didn't have an oyster. So we're like, all right, now it's oyster versus non-oyster.
Yeah.
Who's gonna?
I think it was like 3 of the top 4 people got oysters.
All right, yeah. So maybe he's got some. I mean, maybe he has something. I think he's probably right. I think he seems like a very intelligent person. Seems like he's got a plan and a method. There's got to be something to it. So, all right, boys, thank you. I appreciate it. This has been great. If you want, where can people find you guys on social media? We'll start with Ben here. People did enjoy following along for sure. So I hope they continue to do that for the rest of your skiing adventures. So where can they find you?
Yeah, I guess I'm on Instagram. I hadn't been for a while, and then it just convinced me to get back for a little bit. I'm at Bubba Eck, BUBBAECK. I also have a second Instagram that I'd like to plug. It's SPK_adventures, wherein I try to get sponsored by Sour Patch Kids. It has not been going well, so maybe you all can help.
Well, we'll try to help you get there. Jeremy, where can people find you?
Yeah, on Instagram as well. And I'm Jeremy Arnold. It's a little bit of a odd spelling. Jeremy Arnold.
Beautiful. All right, guys, thank you. I appreciate this.